Hi, I'm Rob Nadelson. The title of this article is Here's Why It Seems Trump is Always in Trouble. Knowledgeable commentators who have defended former President Donald J. Trump, including, for example, Professor Jonathan Turley, acknowledge that the new federal indictment is a major problem. These and other attacks on Trump have his most fervent supporters saying that American institutions have been weaponized against their man as never before. In fact, however, Trump is by no means a special case. He is only one of many politicians against whom institutions have been weaponized, a process that has been going on for a very long time. For several decades, America has had a definable ruling class, essentially a large oligarchy. It consists of federal bureaucracies, a few career federal politicians from safe districts, the managers of certain large businesses, major universities and foundations, and the dominant media. Its members enjoy privileged access to the levers of federal power, so they campaign unceasingly and often at taxpayer expense to increase federal power. The natural adversaries of the ruling class are those who seek to revive the Constitution's limits on federal authority and re-empower individuals, families, religious congregations, local and state governments, small businesses, and private associations. Not surprisingly, therefore, those in control sometimes weaponize institutions against people they see as a threat. For example, since at least the 1940s, presidents favored by the ruling class have deployed the FBI, IRS, and other executive agencies against political opponents. By way of illustration, Lyndon Johnson had the Department of Justice wiretap his 1964 election opponent, Senator Barry Goldwater. Additionally, tax-exempt universities and foundations actively campaign for leftist goals. This is widely known today, but it was already going on 50 years ago. In the early 1970s, major universities used their institutional power to promote labor union organizing, and they awarded students time off to demonstrate against the American cause in Vietnam. Cornell University, to name just one, cooperated with the Ford Foundation to grant academic credit for leftist political mobilization and for producing a Trotskyite, that means a kind of communist, newspaper. No conservative causes received similar accommodations. Additionally, the institutional media have been tilted to the left for my entire lifetime. I still have notes in my diary from my high school years in the 1960s documenting how the New York Times slanted articles against conservative causes and politicians. The same national media that lionized Franklin Roosevelt and John F. Kennedy portrayed Dwight Eisenhower and Ronald Reagan as lazy ignoramuses. They promoted Lyndon Johnson until the Vietnam War obstructed their plans to expand government further, and then they turned on him. The media helped destroy Barry Goldwater in the 1960s, Richard Nixon in the 1970s, tried to destroy Reagan in the 1980s, and helped deny George H.W. Bush a second term in the 1990s. Here's a personal experience. I first became politically active during the 1960s. Since that time, I've served as campaign manager, political activist, political advisor, and candidate. During the 1990s and 2000s, I was prominent in state-level politics, both as a grassroots activist and as a candidate. My campaigns to reverse tax increases and adopt a school choice plan marked me as the elite's public enemy number one. The media smeared me while often denying the chance to respond. My family was threatened repeatedly, sometimes physically. For years, I had to fend off on-the-job retaliation, and I was subjected to official investigations, lawsuits, and three groundless tax audits and reviews. One state prosecutor even initiated a short-lived criminal investigation, not against me, but against one of our activists. But I was not a political novice. I had learned many of the defensive techniques that those who serve the ruling class never need employ, but that its opponents must use to survive. As a result, I was able to win all of my ballot issue campaigns and to run credible races for governor that helped change the political composition of the state. As far as I can tell, however, former President Trump has never learned those techniques. Here is some of what I learned. First, if you are pro-freedom and pro-constitution, the standards you must meet are far higher than those applied to others. That's just a fact of life. Merely because Hillary Clinton or Joe Biden can get away with something doesn't mean you can. If you cannot accept this, then politics, or at least conservative politics, is not for you. Second, in the typical media environment, media bias is worth about 10% of the vote for ruling class candidates. You must factor this bias into your plans, just as you consider other aspects of the local political climate, such as the party balance among registered voters. Three, most people do not understand how the media manipulates their attitudes. People often have vague negative feelings towards certain candidates without really knowing why. You must find ways to communicate directly with the voters, not through the media, and do so in a disarming manner. Ronald Reagan, of course, was a master of this skill. Four, a conservative candidate must give people specific reasons to vote for him or her and not for his or her opponent. And this includes the necessity for criticizing an opponent, but doing so in a way the media cannot portray as mean-spirited. Five, never trust a journalist. The political graveyards are littered with the bones of politicians who said inadvisable things to a reporter they thought they could trust. Even if the reporter wishes you well, his editors, his superiors, may not. Six, don't talk too much. Know when to shut up. Prioritize what you want to say, and no matter what you are asked, focus only on your top two or three points. Seven, when you do speak, tell the truth. It's not only ethical, it helps you keep your story straight. Privileged candidates often can get away with lies, but pro-freedom or conservative candidates usually cannot. Eight, assume that any email or witnessed conversation may end up on the front page of the newspaper. Nixon taped private conversations, and the tapes were used to destroy him. Nine, avoid impulsive decisions and build a defensive foundation supporting each major decision. I have to say, I was very good at this. The media would take statements by my opponents on faith, but they always wanted proof from me, and I always had that proof available. It appears that Ron DeSantis is very good at this too. Number 10, enlist the best talent you can. Mediocrities may mean well, and they may be loyal, but they can sink you by making mistakes at the very worst time. Number 11, review your principles often. Number 12, once you are in office, concentrate on changes that are both effective and not easily reversed. The only permanent way to weaken the forces of centralization is to defund them. Now let's examine some of the mistakes Mr. Trump has made. The extent to which Trump actually favors constitutional government and decentralization is a subject of disagreement. But the ruling class clearly perceives him as a threat. So it has weaponized institutions against him, just as it has weaponized institutions against others. Trump is constantly in political trouble, largely because he has not applied the rules pro-freedom crusaders must use to defend themselves. For example, he seems to assume, naively, that because privileged politicians can get away with certain conduct, such as retaining classified documents, he can too. Moreover, even his staunchest allies admit he talks too much and about too much. He also has been indiscreet in admitting witnesses to conversations. You know, asking a foreign president for a favor against a political opponent, while questionable, is not a very serious infraction. But because Trump allowed witnesses to overhear his conversation with the president of Ukraine, he found himself impeached. Many of Trump's decisions, including good decisions, have been made on impulse and without the foundation needed to defend them. His use of talent has been inconsistent, with some excellent appointments, but also some very poor ones. His successes in foreign policy, executive policy, and deregulation were mostly of the kinds that are easily reversible. So naturally, his successor promptly reversed them. Trump could have brought about more lasting change by defunding or eliminating wasteful and abusive government programs. But as a candidate in 2016, he explicitly ruled out that option. And if his current attacks on DeSantis for supporting federal budget cuts is any indication, Trump has still not learned this lesson. Finally, he has often been fuzzy on basic principles. When the pandemic came, he forgot them entirely. Senator Marco Rubio correctly said, quote, "The Constitution and common sense dictates that decisions on the pandemic be made at the state level," end quote. But Trump claimed, and I'm quoting here, total power, and that he turned that power over to Fauci and company. This decision effectively ended his presidency. Trump, like other politicians opposed by the ruling class, has been the victim of viciously unfair treatment. But such treatment is nothing new. Much is made of the fact that a former president has never been indicted before. But this may be true only because Trump is the first former president opposed by the modern ruling class who's ever tried to win re-election to the presidency. Can anyone doubt that if, say, Richard Nixon had tried to regain the presidency, that he would have been indicted? Of course he would have been. There's a lesson here for freedom-oriented voters as well. The presidency is not a place to learn on the job. The fact that a presidential candidate has never held political office is not a recommendation. We should promote candidates who approve their honesty and devotion to principle while serving successfully in public office. I'm Rob Nadelson, and thanks for listening.